All righty. This is KX93.5. You are listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Sunday morning from 9 to 10. KX93.5, and you're listening to The Importance of Being Show. And we'll be right back after these songs to get the show started.
Good morning, heartache, you old gloomy sight. Good morning, heartache, thought we said goodbye last night. I turned and tossed until it seemed you had gone. But here you are with the dawn. Wish I'd forget you, but you're here to stay. It seems I met you when my love went away. Now every day I start by saying to you, good morning, heartache, what's new? Stop haunting me now. Just leave me alone. I've got those Monday blues, straight through Sunday blues. Good morning, heartache, here we go again. Good morning, heartache, you're the one who knew me when. Might as well get used to you. Good morning, heartache, sit down. Stop haunting me now. Can't shake you no how. Just leave. Sunday blues. Good morning, heartache, here we go again. Good morning, heartache, you're the one who knew me when. Might as well get used to you hanging around. Good morning, heartache, sit down.
It's a time such as this she'd be tempted to spit if she wasn't so ladylike. She imagines how she might have lived back when legends and history collide. But she looks to her prince, finding sense he's so charmingly slumped at her side. Those days are recalled on the gallery. She's waiting for passion or humor to strike. What shall we do? What shall we do with all this useless beauty? All this useless beauty. Good Friday arrived, the sky darkened on time, till he almost began to negotiate. And she held his head like a baby and said it's okay if he cried. Now he wants her to dress as if you couldn't guess. He desires to impress his associates. But he's part ugly beast and Hellenic deceased. So she finds the
ceaseless beauty. She won't practice the looks from the great tragic books that were late to deface disgrace celluloid. They no longer make sense, but you can bet if she isn't a sweetheart, a plaything or pet, the film turns her into a veiled threat. Nonsense prevails, modesty fails, grace and virtue turn into stupidity, while the calendar fades, almost all barricades to a pale compromise. While our rulers have feasts on the backsides of beasts, they still think they're the gods of antiquity. If something you missed didn't even exist, it was just an ideal. Is that such a surprise? What shall we do? What shall we do with all this useless beauty? All this useless beauty. What shall we do? What shall we do with all this useless beauty?
All righty, this is KX93.5. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Sunday morning from 9 to 10. And I have been waiting for, it seems like forever, for Christmas to come, and Christmas is here. Well, it's not actually Christmas, but it is Francesca Bell.
I've never played the role of Christmas before.
Yes, playing the role of Christmas. So, Francesca, you're a poet.
Yes, I am.
And we met quite a while ago, and we've been kind of arranging this for a while, and it's here.
I know, it's finally here.
And so... You are a pretty well-known poet, I guess, contemporarily, right?
Well, I think so. It's hard to judge how well-known a person is when you are that person. But people tell me I'm a fairly well-known poet. Well, I think especially with poetry, it's hard to tell.
Right, you could be right. You could be with poetry royalty in the supermarket
exactly.
line, and no one will know except for a...
No one will know. You can stop the sentence there. No one will know.
So the phone is ringing. I don't understand. Oh, good. Nope, they didn't go away. This is odd. We're going to see what this is.
Okay. I thought we were getting a call-in question.
We don't even do that here, or I don't do that. Anyway, let's get back on track. Hi, Francesca. Welcome.
Thank you, Ernest. KX93.5. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so poetry is not the most chosen path in life. How did you end up becoming a poet? What prompted you to choose that over all the other things that are out there?
You know, I think I fell in love with poetry already when I was 4 years old.
Really?
Yes. My sister, I have an older sister, she was 7 and I was 4, and we had a set of encyclopedias in our house.
Oh yes, back in the day.
Back in the day, and she must have done all the reading, because I didn't read yet then at 4, but we memorized poems and would perform them together.
Wow.
And I imagine our parents had to sit through some of this.
That's good, clean fun.
Yeah. And she had, so mine was called Poor Dog Trey. That was my trademark poem, you know, my signature poem that I recited. And it was about this sort of, you know, poor dog that followed his poor master. And I think they died in the cold.
Oh, yeah.
And my sister's was about a bronco who could not be broken of dancing. and it summed us both up pretty well.
Really?
I was the quieter sister, and she was definitely the much more exciting sister. And so I think that's when I started to love poetry.
Okay, and then you just kind of stuck with it.
Well, you know, I wrote my first poem when I was six.
Okay.
I was jealous because my sister had homework and I had no homework. And So she brought home an assignment to write a poem. And I remember still sitting down at the kitchen table when I was six and writing a poem about a daisy.
Okay.
That thankfully does not survive. And and so then when I was nine, my mom gave me a collection of poems.
Wow.
And
so it's just kind of preordained.
Well, or at least it chose me early.
Okay.
But then it's been a very circuitous route. You know, most poets today have master's degrees at least or PhDs.
Yes, yes.
And I actually don't have any degrees.
I'm usually afraid of interviewing them because their command of the language is so sharp that they can be insulting you and you don't even know.
Yes. Yes, yes. Poets are a terrifying lot. Yes, well, you can feel safe
like
with
Jason
me.
Jason Bourne. He put two interviewers in the hospital yesterday.
That's right. That's right, and they didn't even know they'd been hit.
Yeah, the sword goes through, and it takes a while for your head to fall off.
Exactly. Well, you can feel safe with me. I'm that rare, uneducated poet. For me, it's been a circuitous path. I wrote poems off and on, you know, throughout my youth, and then when I was 26, I had my first child, and I had written and published a little bit then.
Okay.
And then the wheels just came off the bus completely. And I didn't write anything for 9 years after that.
Because you were momming?
I was momming, and I have a family member who had a mental illness. I was taking care of him.
Okay, all right.
And so for 9 years, I didn't write anything. And then I slowly started once my kids were settled in school, mm-hmm. and my relative was much recovered.
Okay.
Then I started writing again and sending my work out. And then I had a third child.
Oh.
And so that slowed me some, but I've been sort of creeping along at a glacial pace.
That child had to rock the papoose pouch while you were typing.
Well, I think with her, I was determined more than I was with the earlier children. I felt like I had a great expanse of time ahead of me. Mm. And so I could take time off completely and go back to it later.
Right.
And then by the time I had my third child, I was 38. And most people have one, or even nowadays, you might have two books by that time.
Okay.
And I had zero books. And so I felt then that I just had to just claw my way along, just
almost
word by word.
Hmm.
There's one poem I remember I wrote part of it just like in June, and then there was summer break, and then I finished it in September. But it took that, you know, within the confines of the life that I chose for myself to keep going.
So let's go back to the uneducated poet. So you're in the poetry circles, you're walking around with these people that are master's degrees and PhDs. How do they respond to you?
I'm not really sure.
Don't bother asking.
No, it's, I don't know. You know, I live very much outside of that world.
Okay.
So most poets today, you know, who are really serious poets are professors, mm-hmm. and they exist in a completely different world than I exist in. No, they just do.
Yeah.
I mean, they...
Yeah, the ivory towers and all.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call it the ivory tower, but just that they are, you know, they're immersed in a world that I'm not immersed in. So I don't know that many poets, you know, personally. I have lived essentially in my kitchen, you know, I've done a lot of my writing at my kitchen table. You know, that's sort of the hub of my world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for most of them, they travel a lot. They teach during the year. They teach at festivals and conferences. They make appearances.
Right.
They go to residencies.
Yep.
And so I think that that's a world I don't really belong to.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know how I'm regarded to a certain extent.
Well, apparently you were regarded in some respect because you were at the poetry festival that we had in town.
Yes, I was. But that's not an academic poetry festival. And that was the first one I had ever presented at.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes. I've been living I've been living in a very solitary life.
Okay.
You know, compared to, I don't mean that other poets don't experience living a solitary life, sure. even if they're in academia.
Sure.
But that they have...
But usually teaching is a part of it.
Well, teaching is a part of it, and much poetry is published either by university presses or in university-affiliated journals.
Sure.
That poetry really lives on campus, mm-hmm. you know, in American life today, yeah. to a huge extent. Yes. And so I definitely come from outside of that.
I mean, I guess other than when it's applied to music or music is applied to it, then yeah, it's...
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you get published?
Because I'm very tenacious. and so you get published, anybody gets published really by sending their work out and being rejected hundreds of times. And I mean, hundreds and hundreds of times.
But I mean, for somebody who's not in the scene, hasn't, you know, got a foothold or you know, even a sponsor.
That's... Without nepotism, how did I get published?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, or how did you even have the courage to send your stuff in and think it was good enough for other people to read?
You know, I had some college, and I'd taken a few workshops, poetry workshops mm-hmm. in college. So I'd received good feedback.
Oh, okay.
Back then,
right?
And
right.
I think that can sustain you through years and years of a dry spell. And then I think there's something, I don't know if other people experience this, but there's something in me that I noticed that I could only describe as a completely irrational belief in my work.
Oh.
And it doesn't mean that I sit around and think my work is fantastic, but no matter how many times people send it back and say they don't want it, I still send it out, which is completely irrational. But I think it's that, I think that's what it takes to make it, I mean, that's what it takes to make it in music or acting.
Right.
I mean, any right. of these sort of, well, any in the arts, mm-hmm. you know, where there's scarcity of opportunity.
Right.
Which there really is in poetry because there's not money attached to poetry.
Yes,
so
yes,
there really
yes,
is scarcity, yes. extreme scarcity.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of Van Gogh, you know, someone who couldn't live without doing what he was doing, right? He wasn't looking for the external rewards or anything because there weren't any.
Well, he might have been looking for them, but he certainly wasn't finding them. And that didn't deter him.
Right.
Yeah.
He couldn't live any other way. So.
Yeah, and there's, I mean, I suppose, I don't know if I could, I guess you could live, I could live without writing, but I think I would always be writing in my head. I think the writing occurs whether it's occurring in the external world or not.
And so your... belief in your talent or your belief in yourself, how do you, well, where did it come from? I mean, why do you, because I mean,
I don't know.
People would get discouraged and say, gosh,
I get discouraged.
Maybe I can't do this.
I get discouraged. But again, I would say it's a stubbornness or an irrationality more than a belief. Like, it's funny. I had a class from David Wagner at the University of Washington, and he said something that I think is actually not a quote of his, but I've always thought of it as his quote. Mm-hmm. But he said that you'll never know if your poems are any good or not.
Hmm.
And if you need to know, you shouldn't write. but I think there's truth to that.
Yeah.
And I think there's, whether it's compulsion to do it or this, what I refer to as an irrationality,
mm-hmm.
I think that for me, there's a stubbornness and a tenacity, and I just haven't been willing to give up.
Okay. And so you've had some, you actually, I'm looking at a book right now, so you've obviously had some success.
You know, I've been by now pretty widely published in journals.
Okay.
And I've been widely published in journals. and then I don't remember now.
Invited to things?
Invited to things. And I think it must have been about 8 years ago, I realized that most people who'd been published as much as I had would be circulating a manuscript of poems.
Okay.
And I had no idea if I really had a book or not, and I had no idea how to put it together.
Okay.
And so I reached out to a woman named April Osman. And she is a woman, she's a freelance professional editor. She used to be the executive director of Alice James Books, which is a very prestigious press back east.
Mm-hmm.
And so I approached her and I sent her about 70 poems and I just said, you know, I'm not really sure if there's a book in here, but could you help me?
Okay.
And so she said there was a book and she helped me to shape a manuscript and she's told me where to send it and held my hand for 5 years of failure. And I mean, 5 years of sending it out about, you know, 25 times a year.
Curse blat.
And yeah, and it was, I mean, it wasn't abject failure. I was a finalist at some big places,
okay.
but nobody took
right,
the book.
Right. Right.
And so after that, I was close to quitting on the book.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back.
This is an excellent time to take a break.
Right? We've got some dramatic tension.
That's right.
When we come back, we're going to find out if my guest this morning, Francesca Bell, poet, made it further or if, you know, she quit poetry after making that manuscript. This is KX93.5. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show.
What happened to life? What happened to life? What happened to singing, dancing every night? What happened to love for living your life? Did it fall down by the wayside like a lullaby? Salty eyes, salty to the taste. Salt grains over my shoulder blades. Salty eyes, salty to the taste. Salt grains over my shoulder blades. What happened to God? What happened to God?
Something has come between me and the world that I
This is KX93.5. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Sunday morning from 9 to 10. And today, I am very happy to have Francesca Bell here in studio, poet, mom.
Translator?
Thank you, savior. So when we left off, there was a chance that you were never going to write poetry again. You'd done your manuscript.
I didn't say I was never going to write poetry again.
I said that.
Yeah. I said I was going to stop sending my manuscript out.
Which is the same thing.
No, you could still write.
But it's not. What's the point if, like, nobody can see the flowers?
Well, when you're a poet, you're used to not very many people seeing the flowers probably ever. So that isn't really an impediment to writing. I mean, so, no, I was just
you
on the...
You still subject your kids to poetry time.
No, actually, I try not to subject my kids to my poetry. So I was just to the point that I was wondering whether I ought to keep trying to get a book published.
Right.
Which is, it's a much harder thing to do than to get your poems, your individual poems published in magazines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's much, much harder. And so, and by that time I had two manuscripts. So that last of the 5 years, I had sent two books around and failed.
Okay.
Which is double the fun.
Right. Yeah. If you didn't like this, that one, how about this one?
Just reject me again, please. Yes. And so I actually, I was really frustrated, and I had a friend that had suggested I send a manuscript to Red Hen Press, which is a wonderful press in Pasadena, and I had actually already failed with them before,
right.
And so I was kind of shy about trying again, but my friend encouraged me, so I took both my manuscripts, I printed them out, I threw them up into the air, all those papers, and in my bedroom, and I I just mixed them up I got rid of some poems, and then I created a new manuscript from that mess on my floor. And so I sent it to Red Hen, and a miracle occurred, and they accepted it. And I remembered thinking back to what something that April Osman had told me, which was that I hadn't met my editor yet.
Oh.
And my work tends to be, it's disturbing work.
Okay.
And it's edgy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of presses, while they maybe liked my work enough or admired it enough to make me a finalist in their contests, mm-hmm. I think maybe they didn't feel quite comfortable publishing the book.
Right.
And so
being the face of
being the face of a book that I have poems about serial killers. I have poems about pedophile priests. A lot of poems about violence against women.
Okay.
And sort of the inherent violence of daily life in there. And so I think that Kate Gale really. I know she was. She was my editor. She was the editor I was waiting to meet. Red Hen is a press, they're not really afraid of maybe anything. I'm not sure.
Definitely not Virginia Woolf.
Yeah, no, definitely not Virginia Woolf. Yeah, and so they accepted my book, and then it was almost 2.5 years later that it was published. It was just published in May.
Okay.
I'm saying this because for anybody listening, I just want to keep underlining the word tenacity, because I think it's something that people would never think they could learn from a poet. You know, we're thought of as being sort of, you know, airy fairy,
right, right,
weak, sensitive,
lounging about,
yeah, lazy, dreamy. But in fact,
beatniks.
Yes, you have to be really tough to be
inside.
To be a poet, to break your way through that brick wall. So my book came out in May.
So I don't normally do this, but I did kind of cruise your bio, and the Fighting Wickhams.
The Fighting Wickhams. I hope that some of them are listening. So I come from a really interesting family, really on both sides, but my dad's side was, they were a tough group of people. We have a long, illustrious history of alcoholism, and in the city of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, there were two families. I think they were called the Fighting Wickhams and the Volantes.
Okay.
And I think they had kind of a rivalry.
Oh,
you know,
nice.
Back in the day.
Yep.
Long before my time. They were rabble rousers, fighters, drunks, lot of drunks.
A fun bunch.
Yes. Depending on your taste and fun.
Side you're on.
and probably not a lot of dull moments. They weren't all drunks, but there were a lot of alcoholism runs strongly in both sides of my family.
Okay, okay.
Which is why I'm a teetotaler.
Oh, all right.
Just making a plug for being a teetotaler.
All right. Well, maybe this is the time for a poem.
Oh, for a poem. Okay. So Ernest and I were talking about who the listeners may be this morning, and we thought some of you might be on your way to church, and this is actually one of my favorite poems. And it's based on a very true instance in my life. Woman singing in church. She is not beautiful, slightly awkward, slightly heavy, somewhat made up. But when she releases her voice, a fierce, wild thing, we are pummeled by it, laid open on the blade of its loveliness. She seems also to suffer, as if her voice is an affliction she can't escape. Singing, she has the look of a laboring woman who grimaces as the miracle tears through her, gazing toward heaven, as if to see who put this writhing, keening song in her. Her face shines like Christ's face on the cross, anguished and enraptured, as his life poured out of him in a rush, the gleaming life his body could not contain.
Wow. That's Francesca Bell and Lady Singing in Church?
Woman Singing in
Woman
Church.
Woman Singing in Church.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen a woman or man sing in person who has, I don't know, some people when they sing, it really is as if their voice exists as an entity that is not even of them.
Hmm.
And it just seems to pour out of them, and they have an expression almost as if they're surprised. You know, like the rest of us are just flattened, and they too are surprised.
Huh.
It was especially powerful to hear that in the context of church.
Okay.
And of a woman singing a hymn.
And was that based on a particular person?
Oh yeah, no, it was an exact experience.
Oh, wow.
And I was just crying like a baby. It was really moving.
Huh.
I think often live music can do that.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
Church can do that. And then some people's voices, when they sing, are just really like
authenticity
that.
Authenticity.
Yeah, and there's something about them that just goes right through a person.
Hmm.
Yeah, and she was that kind of a person.
So this is when you threw the two manuscripts up in the air, this one landed somewhere near the top or...
Well, it ended up... One thing I saw when I looked at those poems outside of what had become the bounds of their separate manuscripts is that I felt like I had two books, but they could easily be very different books than what I had been sending out.
Oh, got it, yep.
And so... This book that I ended up sending to Red Hen is more purely dark.
Okay.
The themes are darker, and there's quite a bit of darkness in the next book that I'll start. You know, I wanted to wait until this book was really out in the world before I arranged those poems, and I'm just working on that now.
Okay.
But that book will have. Still plenty of darkness. That seems to be what I'm drawn to writing, but it has more about family life and more love poems that aren't quite as harsh as the love poems in this book.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. This is KX93.5. We're going to take a quick break. This is, I'm speaking this morning with Francesca Bell, and she has a new book, Bright Stain. And, that's that. We'll be back. Talk about more poetry stuff.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see these
Okay, this is KX93.5. You're listening to the Importance of Being show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Sunday morning from 9 to 10. And if you've been listening, then you know that my guest this morning is funny and witty and charming and a poet, Francesca Bell. And she's from the lineage of the Fighting Wickhams.
That's right. Don't leave that out. It gives me some street cred. At least in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
anywhere there's honky-tonks.
That's right.
When I got up this morning thinking about what we might be talking about, I didn't really think it would be all about perseverance. But apparently that's a part of this.
It's a huge part of it.
And so you've persevered to the point where you're going to have a...
Well, I'm actually on a book tour. Toward the end of March, I started traveling, and I won't finish traveling until around Thanksgiving,
okay,
which is highly unusual for me. I used to have a phobia of flying.
Oh.
It has now been flown right out of me. I can no longer become interested in whether or not I'm going to live or die on a plane because I've been on so many planes. And I'm excited to be reading on Tuesday in this area. I'll be reading in Santa Monica at the Annenberg Beach House.
Oh, wow.
And I'm thrilled to have the chance to read with Ilya Kaminsky. Mm-hmm. He is a poet who's infinitely more famous than I am. And he is funny and kind and just a brilliant poet and an amazing human being. And the reading is sponsored by Red Hen Press.
Okay.
One thing that's unusual about Red Hen that I certainly am thrilled about is they have a reading series in the LA area and they have one in New York. Because it's hard to book readings when you're a poet. You know, it takes a lot of hustle and and so
tenacity.
Yeah, and tenacity. Yeah, and so
No.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a highly competitive field. People don't think of it that way. But,
right, you don't think of them like sharp elbows.
Oh my gosh,
up.
Tough world, really tough world. Yeah, yeah. So if you're going to be in the Santa Monica area, or even if you're not. It's going to be a great night of poetry. And it's right there on the beach. It'll be around, we'll finish up around sunset. And
okay.
So I'm planning to walk back to my hotel along the beach.
Wow.
Yeah, so come on out.
The girl from Coeur d'Alene.
Yeah. Well, I was born in Spokane, but that's very close to Coeur d'Alene.
Okay.
Yeah.
One of those live radio moments.
Ernest and I were talking about how terrified I was that I would forget, you know, a name or not have anything to say, and then we would deadline.
Right, and I could see it here on the recording.
Yeah, the flatlining of the conversation. But we're bringing it back.
Yeah, clear. So what does it feel like, you know, being on tour? I mean, you've been... a kitchen poet for a very long time and a mom and you know, so kind of an ordinary life and very kind of routine.
Yeah.
And so now you're like a rock star flying from city to city. Do you remember what town you're in when you go to the mic?
Well, yeah, it's not as dramatic a tour as that, but by the end of it, I think I will have made about 50 appearances.
Okay.
Which is a lot. You know, what it's like is, at times, it's really amazing. Giving the readings is almost universally, you know, amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a poet, it's wonderful to have people read your work or listen to your work. Sometimes, you know, you show up and, like, I was recently in West Virginia and 4 people came to the reading. And and luckily, that didn't include my co-reader and the woman who hosted us at the bookstore. So we were 6, or I guess 7 people, including me, in the room. And I mean, it was wonderful, but that was a little demoralizing.
Right.
But mostly, it's been really fascinating. It's been fascinating to me to see different parts of the country.
Okay.
You know, like to be in West Virginia, to drive through Appalachia.
Right.
I drove from West Virginia to Virginia.
Okay.
And you know, I'm from California, an extremely blue state.
Yes.
And I actually think it's been really, really good for me to travel. You know, I was in Omaha and Lincoln, Nebraska.
Oh, yeah, that's Part of flyover country.
Yeah. Yeah. So that part has been wonderful. I get homesick. You know, I miss my family and my dogs. And
oh, okay.
I desperately miss my routine. I usually run every day, and that's fallen by the wayside. I packed on a little tour, pounds.
Oh,
some
yes.
book tour pounds. but mostly it's been really an amazing. I mean, it's incredible. As a poet, I think most poets are very isolated. As far as you never know if somebody's reading your work. Is anybody listening to you out there?
Right,
are they hearing you?
Yep.
And it's been really rewarding to meet people in different parts of the country, you know, who have actually read my book.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That must be like
people who want my autograph. I have realized that if I had ever achieved any kind of real fame, you know, like an actor or rock star, I would have been like Judy Garland. I would have been a complete drug addict. I mean, I would have been so nervous, and there's so much pressure.
Oh.
And this is, I'm doing just this little baby thing.
Right, right.
Small-scale thing.
It's a very niche kind of.
You know, I can't imagine, you know, being an actor where you have a movie's budget has rested on your shoulders, you know, and its success rests on you. And then you're traveling to a different city every day. I'd totally be a drug addict. Yeah.
So then wild parties on the poetry tour. Groupies.
I wouldn't say no wild parties. I have been amazed that I had imagined I would be spending most of my time just alone. But there have been real people who've read my work who have invited me to, you know, to dinner or to lunch or, you know, there was Terry in Charlottesville who cooked me, you know, lunch. So it's been, I've met a lot of people, and I've met a lot of poets. And as I said, I don't know as many poets as people who are, you know, engaged in the academic poet life do.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, wow. Well, one more time with the reading.
Okay, Annenberg Beach House, 6:30, Tuesday, Ilya Kaminsky and Francesca Bell, and we will knock your socks off.
Awesome. And that's in Santa Monica. This is KX93.5. You've been listening to The Importance of Being Show. And that's all the time we have. So coming up next will be Steve Reed with the Coast Highway Shuffle. Thank you so much for being on the show this morning, Francesca.
Thank you for having me, Ernest.
And next time you're on tour, please, you know, drop by.
I will. I definitely will.
All right. This is KX93.5.